Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got two people on the microphone right now, Natalie Paraccio and Ted Von Bevern, and they are the writer, director, and cinematographer, and by the way, Natalie is the writer, director, also the editor, of the short film Beast. And Beast is a really good film. I enjoyed it so much at the festival. It was at the Festival Filmvasion LA in 2019. And it happened to win the Grand Jury Prize for Best Art Direction. So bravo on that. By the way, you guys can say hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm not talking alone in void, actually.
Yeah.
And Beast, besides being at Filmvasion LA in 2019, I'm proud to say Beast is in the companion TV series to this podcast. Or you could say the podcast is a companion TV series. It's tough to say. Podcast game first. But it is in the Discovery Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. If you go to Prime Video, search for Discovery Indie Film, go to Season 3, Episode 7, and you will see a really cool episode. The Discovery Indie Film TV series is an anthology of films handpicked from the festival circuit. And it's Natalie's film Beast with a film called The Man and Mel. Both really smart, interesting, visually stunning films. I always love it when there's an episode that's, I feel like the films are extra creative.
Yeah, I feel like it's an arty episode.
It is an arty episode. Yeah. Yeah, Man and Mel. They go well together too, I feel.
Yeah.
So before we talk about Beast too much, I'm always curious. We've got a writer, director, and a cinematographer here. So Natalie, you can go first, but you can, if you want to just tell us about your early inspirations and what got you into film and into filmmaking, that'd be great.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I feel like Ted's here, and I feel like we both kind of got into filmmaking together and at the same time, so it's kind of a similar story because I grew up in the Midwest and movies were not like a big thing for me. I was like not aware of filmmaking as a career or even like a thing that happened. And it wasn't until like later in high school and in college that I became interested in film and started watching movies more seriously and realizing like, oh, I really enjoy doing this. And, I went to college and there wasn't a film program at my school, so I studied creative writing as sort of a way to get into storytelling, and screenwriting was part of that, so that's kind of how I got into screenwriting. And at the same time, I was like meeting other people who had interests, and Ted is someone I met who already was very interested in cinematography, and that's how I started to realize like, oh, this is a thing. And get interested in that.
This is a job.
And you met at college?
Yeah, we met in college.
And so were you just always a creative person though?
Yeah, I think when I was younger and like throughout high school, it was more like fine art. Like I did a lot of drawing and painting, and then I got interested in design, like graphic design, industrial design, and for a while thought maybe that's what I wanted to do as a career, but always felt like it wasn't quite, I don't know, it was like something was missing, kind of. I wasn't passionate enough about it. And so I kind of was like, oh, I need a few more years to figure out what I really want to do.
I have to say, there's a handful of filmmakers I've spoken to in the last couple of years who started out as fine artists. I'll just call it fine artists because I don't know, you know, painters and photographers.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to already assume that's one reason why Beast is just a little more visual than the average film that comes through the festival circuit, because you came to this medium already have thinking about about, you know, a purely visual medium of, you know, painting and drawing.
Yeah, I think that comes in. I was looking at Beast and looking at like what the references were that I was looking at. And I think it comes in a lot in terms of like I'll have a lot more maybe like fine art references than film references when I'm making something, and I'll it'll be like paintings or sculptures or things like relating to art history, which I think definitely ties in to my filmmaking.
Which is so cool, because that's a subtext that I bet, you know, I'm not going to catch. But to me, I mean, I just find it captivating from the very first shot. And I'm sure those references and things you're talking about are how you have the skill to captivate with visuals.
Yeah, I think it's like having, I think the visual language definitely like helps, and it's another side. It's interesting because I think since then, being more immersed in film, I feel like I'm able to, I feel like the things I'm creating now kind of have a balance. And I think when I started, because Beast was an earlier project, it was much more visually focused or visually driven that way. So it's been kind of a development.
And so when you met, so my understanding is, so Ted, you were already into cinematography.
Yeah, I think when we met in college, I had been kind of making movies for a while, but I think I had kind of just gotten into cinematography as a discipline, and like that being my focus kind of when we met.
Sounds like you were doing it on your own, because the, or was it, were you in that program at school?
No, well, not in undergrad. I was, I guess for background, kind of coming up, I had always been making like little short films with friends, and, you know, doing projects in high school. And like we used to do a bunch of 48-hour film projects, if you're familiar with that sort of system. but yeah, so I used to make those. And then around the time we met, I had sort of discovered my interest in cinematography specifically, and had been focusing more on shooting things. That was kind of the role I naturally fell into early on.
And you had done photography for a long time though, right?
Yeah, I guess to kind of go back through my story, I think I started doing still photography at a really young age. That was something I remember, like an early memory of getting like a little Polaroid camera. It was like one of my earliest memories. I can remember when I think I got one for Christmas, like a little kid's Polaroid, and that I was just fascinated with it. I don't know exactly what drew me to it, but I had been doing still photography for most of my life, and just really loved it and loved that art form. And so then I think once I started making movies, like in high school, I would always naturally gravitate toward operating the camera and kind of doing the visual aspects of things, and my friends would direct and stuff. So I think, yeah, I kind of naturally fell into it that way. It was sort of a natural extension of the still photography that I had been doing.
Yeah, I always find that to be the case in a cool story where when it's sort of a collective, I mean, obviously a bunch of friends making films for fun is not an artist collective, but it kind of is anyway,
yeah,
unofficially. And everyone tries everything.
Yeah.
And then it ends up so-and-so is almost always in front of the camera, and so-and-so is always holding the camera.
Exactly.
And so-and-so is like paying attention to continuity and becomes a director. And it's more natural, I think, than, you know, a bunch of people.
Yeah, I think that was a really fun environment for me in high school. I think like in our little group of friends that would make movies, because I think it's a very free environment where you can sort of experiment creatively and just have fun and learn what you gravitate toward. And that sort of started, I took some video classes in high school. That was like what got me into it.
and then you met Natalie and said, "Hey, could you direct?
Yeah,
you want to just direct so that I can DP?"
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't remember how we made our first, what was our first?
We did. It took a while because we were in college and we were in a club where we projected films.
Right,
we had, we had the college had a 35mm projector. Mm-hmm. And so we would like, everyone would take turns like doing projections for like the weekend movies that we would show. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
I remember that, yeah. I was fascinated by that. I was so excited to learn to project using the 35mm projector because it was clear at that point that film was going away. And I wanted to have that experience of learning to do that before they got rid of it. And
movie clubs serve, 30% of what film school is, because most of film school is watching stuff and analyzing it and writing up a paper.
Exactly.
So we ended up watching, I feel like we didn't start working together on anything for a while, but we would go and watch all of the movies together and project them. And that's how I started learning about film for the first time, really, because we would watch the director's commentary you introduced me to, I didn't know who Roger Deakins was. And he was at that point, Ted's big inspiration.
Yeah.
And he had a website. He still has a website, but he had a website where he would just answer people's questions on how he did things.
This was the early days of when Roger Deakins had a website, and it was
like a forum.
It was a much smaller community than it was now. It's grown into a big thing now.
So it was literally just learning from watching movies, projecting movies, reading his website and being okay, eventually we should make a movie.
I mean, I learned a tremendous amount from just reading those early forums about lighting and stuff. And that was kind of an early film school for me.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think I picked up the Graduate Film School comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into the story.
Well, yeah. So I guess to sort of complete the story, we met in college, and then shortly after I ended up going to grad school for cinematography. Around the time we met, I was just applying to places. And so, yeah, then I went to AFI for a couple of years for cinematography specifically, and then graduated.
Is kind of their strong suit. And Natalie, you did...
So I'm actually in... The pandemic has complicated this, but I had actually started an MFA program last year. And so I have been through my first year at Emerson in Boston, and then I'm on my leave of absence right now due to the pandemic, but we'll be going back in the fall. He's finished. I'm
right. So actually I kind of messed up the order of things, because post Beast, you've gone for your MFA.
Back to school. Yeah, exactly.
Because I couldn't remember if Beast was submitted it as a student film or not.
No, because that was before. That was the project that I did. And then actually through doing that project, I was feeling it was one of the biggest things that made me feel okay, I want to go to a film school and really get more of an education in how to do this.
Right. So I guess the questions I totally dropped the ball on are things so when you got interested in film after the film club and stuff, when did you start writing and or directing fun little things or bigger ambitious things?
So when I, in college, I was taking screenwriting classes, and we would do short screenplays and stuff like that. And, it was the first time I had never read a screenplay. I had never written anything, period. So I just sort of jumped into creative writing. And that was, it's funny, I'm realizing now how it all feels very slapdash. I was but yeah, so it took me a little while to really get comfortable with that, even just with writing and having other people read my writing. And so it wasn't until the end of college that I was okay, I feel ready to make a short film. And so that was the first short that we made together and that I had ever made was the very end of college. And it was very it was very student short film. It was just, we were in friends' apartments and houses. We had a U-Haul van.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. I completely forgot about that. Actually.
It was what do we use as a camera?
I don't even I think we might have shot on a 5D with the modified firmware, if you've ever done that. I don't know, that was a thing around when the 5D was big, was that you could flash the firmware so that you could record RAW with it, I think.
Oh, RAW, because I know sometimes people modify the firmware to adjust the recording time also, because sometimes those DSLRs cut you off.
Yeah, it would solve all those issues. I think it would record RAW, so you had a lot better color and image quality, and it also got around the recording limit issues. I think that's what we used on that.
Yeah, and it was like a psychological, like,
yeah.
thriller? I don't know.
Drama.
Psychological drama.
Yeah.
It was like about a student kind of like going crazy, and
it was very tonal, I remember.
Yeah. I think I was like very into Kubrick at the time, which is like, it's so funny to be like, I'm making a student film and like the reference is Kubrick because it's like,
there's no reason not to start at the top.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the first thing you've ever made, like the first screenplay you've ever written. And that's the ambition.
Well, and dealing with psychological demons, I'm starting to sense a theme. Two projects I know about so far, but yeah, you're very tuned into the inner world of people's minds, I think.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a theme. I think it was like a lot of maybe darker tones and those things. I think honestly, it was just not a good time for me. And it was coming out probably. Yeah. No input from Todd.
Fair enough. Obviously the film, did you enjoy the process? I mean, did it inspire you to really want to focus on it?
Yeah. So it was like very much a disaster, but I was like, this is what I want to do for sure. And I think it was finally getting to work with actors and like being in a team of people and having that energy was like, I realized, it was directing for me.
And I'll fish a little, Ted, I'm going to let you chime in. When you watched her direct for the first time, could you tell that she was, did it really show that she had a natural talent for it?
Well, yeah, it's funny you ask that. I was thinking as you were telling that, I remember having a really good experience on that project, I think, because it was, I did have a sense of that for sure. And I think it was really clear. I think that she has a really good understanding of people that I think is kind of unique and has a lot of insight into that. And yeah, and I think one thing also that I was reminded of earlier at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned all the fine art references and stuff. And I think that's something that's kind of unique about us working together is that I came from a lot more knowledge of movies and that art form specifically. And so I think when we started working together, referencing a lot more fine art, whether it's visual art or, you know, any other art form, I think was kind of a new thing for me. And it expanded my horizons a lot. And I think it still is something that's kind of unique about us working together. I think we tend to reference a lot more other art forms than other projects that I do. And I think I really appreciate that. I think it does bring a deeper level of insight to things sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this project that is so far nameless, I won't finish unless you want to share a title. Nope. The hand is wiping across the neck. So we won't even throw the title out there.
Never be seen.
It is. It needs to be in a shoebox, and the shoebox is buried and burned. Got it.
Yeah, exactly.
But so were there, did you do some more right away? I'm wondering how many until Beast or?
No.
Beast was next?
No, because
Beast was next.
I think after, I'm not prolific. I think after we did that, I was like, oh, I need to figure some stuff out because I think I was like, I need to learn more kind of. And that's when I graduated from college and I moved out here and I started working for, I worked as a production assistant. I worked for different production companies and I just wanted to learn like how, you know, production works essentially. Like, I think doing that like first little short film, it was like a wake up call of like, oh, I need to understand more about how this works. And so I took some time and I was working, I worked on like commercials and music videos and got to see behind the scenes. And at the same time I was writing and just trying to sort of like develop a little bit as a writer as well, because I think, I don't know, maybe I was like, I know a lot of filmmakers who are just like, yeah, just like go out there and shoot and make something. But for me, it's like too heartbreaking when it doesn't like live up to my idea. So I was like, I can't, I don't know. I don't have the endurance for that maybe. So I was taking my time and, just trying to practice writing and getting better. And, after being on a couple of projects, that's when I think I felt comfortable with like, okay, I think I know more of what I'm doing here.
I mean, I think it's a really interesting story because you're essentially saying you took a stab and then you sort of did your own educational program working on other films, and then you were writing. It sounds like you were writing the whole time. And then you hit a point where you said, okay, I'm, because honestly, everyone has to have a first thing that they don't like so that they can start making the things that they do. I mean, that's just how it works. So then did you write Beast? Did it just come out of you or were you writing with a specific goal in mind?
No, I think I had been writing and I think that I'm pretty sure that I, there's like the first image in the film, which is like the spider kind of like emerging. And I think that I had like had that image kind of like come to me and, I started just writing based on that. And the story that developed out of it came from that idea of like a girl and a spider and sort of a relationship developing there. And once I had like written it, I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And that's when it felt like the story connected to a lot of things visually that I was also interested in. Sort of, I could start imagining this world, and that's when I got interested in making it.
And did it come together? I gotta say that I think my note from, this is my actual notes from watching it again for this talk, I wrote, from the first shot, it's unique and captivating. Like, so to hear you mention that, like you visualize that first image, it's just so captivating right from there.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, like, if I have an idea for a story, so it'll like come out of an image that way. And then it's kind of like when a characters connect with like a visual world and then I can start to imagine it. I was going to ask you, do you remember like how that came about? Do you have a different, because also like we've been together since college. So like we're always like working on things together. And like every time we do a project together, it's like from the beginning to the end. Like he's a cinematographer, but he's also like reading everything that
Well, it's a really unique position to be in, I think. And it's a position I really enjoy being in as a cinematographer, because I think it, usually on most projects, they come to you with the script and it's like you have a couple weeks of prep and like things are very much in motion. But I think on these projects, you know, I'm reading early drafts, even if it's a couple pages, you know, of just an outline or something. And I think it's a really unique idea. Really unique opportunity to sort of shape the movie visually from a really early point. And I really enjoy that because I think it allows you to sort of intertwine the story and the visuals so tightly in ways that aren't always possible on other projects. And I I remember that process kind of happening on Beast as well, reading. I remember it evolving a lot over the drafts that we read, and we would kind of come up with these images, you know, as you were writing stuff. And so they really very much evolved hand in hand. And I think the opening shots came about, the opening scene, I think, came about that way. It kind of evolved as you were rewriting things.
Yeah, and Natalie, when you're writing, you're describing visuals.
Yeah, I think, and again, like, I think this is something that's definitely changed, but I used to be, like, extremely specific of, like, which is, I think, yeah, I can see it in Beast. It's a good thing and a bad thing, I think, but, yeah, I definitely was very specific about, like, how I wanted, even, like, the characters to be dressed, or, like, the world, how that should look like, or the hair and makeup, and all of those elements, you know? And I think that also comes from not having made many projects, too, because I think it comes from coming from writing. You can create the whole world yourself, whereas, like, filmmaking is a much more collaborative process, and it's something that I've definitely, like, become more open to and understand more about, like, how to collaborate with other people. But I think at the time I was I had all of these ideas in my head.
Mm-hmm. When I've always heard, I mean, I hear about screenplays and specific screenwriters who are a lot more visual, and I think even reading the name, but like that, the Robin Williams film, What Dreams May Come. And I remember reading a review or something that said, like, the director said, first time I read it, I thought, felt like I was reading a novel, because it was just, it just created a world, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in my very strong opinion, whatever you wrote in the script for of Beast that you were running by Ted as, and by the way, what a great luxury to have someone you trust, right, that you can hand pages to, because Lord knows most writers search friend after friend and no one really gets it. So that's really great. But I mean, if the first line was a spider crawls up versus you describing exactly what it's going to look like, or at least what you'd like it to, and then, you know, film is compromised.
I remember it being much more detailed.
Yeah,
than the spider crawling. Like, a lot of screenplays might write, the spider crawls out of the drain or something. But I remember it was probably almost a page of detail of, like, you know, every little movement and the moments, and you know, she pauses. And I remember, like, that level of detail of, like, a leg, you know, inches out of this pile of, you know, and then.
Yeah, and I think that's brilliant. I think that's why the film is so captivating and unique, because it raises the standard right from the page.
It would have been fun. I probably have all those old drafts of script around
somewhere. Burn them.
Burn them? What do you mean? That's the bonus features eventually when this is, you know. Well, so was it a long process writing Beast, or did you?
I think the writing was not that long, but it was really, like, it was a really long production process from, like, deciding that we wanted to make it. Because I think as soon as I decided I wanted to make it, I think another theme is having, like, very high ambitions and very little experience. So I definitely had a vision for what I wanted to be, and, being able to achieve that took time, because it was like, okay, how do we make this spider? The spider is a big character. I had never done anything with animation or VFX or anything like that. So that was like a huge, like, we had to learn about that and how to do it, and find people to help.
A lot of testing.
So yeah, it was like every single piece of it was learning as we did it, basically. Yeah.
Did you work on the spider even before you cast and stuff? Like, did you test that stuff? Or did you start shooting and then try to wing the spider?
Oh, no. No winging. Nothing is winged. No, that was like, I knew, for whatever reason, I immediately wanted real sisters to play the sisters. I think also just being a new director, I felt like there would be a built-in chemistry and relationship there. And so I was pretty set on, like, I think they should be real sisters and we should, like, feel a relationship between them and they'll be comfortable. And also with them being younger, I felt like it would be nice for them to feel supported by each other. So when I set out to make it, I was like, okay, I know that's going to be a process of finding the right people. So it was kind of this, like, we were doing the two simultaneously, like casting the spider and casting the sisters. So we were casting for them. And then we were also, I was looking for an animator to collaborate with, to make the spider with stop motion. So that was kind of both happening at the same time, I guess.
And we knew we wanted to do the spider with stop motion as well. That was really important from the beginning, I think, for just the feel of it.
And for it to be like a real physical.
We knew we didn't want to CG it or kind of VFX it. And like it was, that was really important to feel the physicality of it, I think.
Yeah, and it adds something because it gives it a more classic analog kind of feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such a genre breaking sort of short because it's not really horror, but it's close, and it's not, you know, it's not dramatic, but it's close. Like it really, I think because you don't get to see a lot of stop motion anymore. Right. So the refreshing oddness of stop motion versus some stupid digital, so judgy, but you know, how clean, like I'm sure there's plugins for After Effects, we're like, yeah, spider, instant spider.
To make it.
Yeah. And then it'll look like, you know, do you want one or 10,000? But
yeah,
it's just so unique and different to see a spider like that.
Yeah. And I think we are also inspired by, I think this came along with the decision to use the 4:3 aspect ratio, but we had been very inspired by like early, or I don't know if early, now it's early, Disney animations, mm-hmm. like Cinderella and Alice in Wonderland was like a big reference. And there's an animator, Jan Svankmajer. He did a version of Alice in Wonderland, but it's all stop motion. And that was also a big reference. So I think the stop motion feeling kind of old-fashioned went along with that vibe.
Yeah, I think from the beginning that it was, we were trying to do all these things to sort of bring elements of fantasy into it, and mm-hmm. because a lot of our references were, you know, Disney animations and these sort of magical realism, or not even magical realism, just magical mm-hmm. references, and the stop motion was part of that, and the 4:3 came from there. And the film grain and the color all came from mm-hmm. that aspect of sort of suspending disbelief. And
yeah, you grain. May not know this, but you were trailblazers. I'm 100% sure that Beast was the first 4:3 that we'd gotten in the first 4 or 5. That would have been our fourth year of the festival. Yeah, fourth year. And now it happens all the time. Now people are really into, like when you did 4:3, I was like, wow, I haven't seen anything. I almost, this is funny, but first, I think the first time I saw it, I was like, wait, is that perfectly square like Instagram or is that 4:3? Yeah. So, because especially on the film festival circuit, so many people go for like really wide. Like they're like, I'm going to do CinemaScope just so because it's so easy to letterbox.
That was like the trend when we were doing was like the super, super wide.
It's cinematic. Everyone says it's cinematic.
Yeah. Whereas you went the opposite way and now lots of people. So, I mean, you absolutely blazed that trail.
We started the trend.
You did. You really did. You started a trend.
It really has. I've seen a lot of stuff in the last
couple years. I do think it's people. I do think now there is a trend of like using very specific like cinematic looks. So like there'll be like this is like 4:3 and it looks like a VHS like video or like kind of like an 80s look, or like it is interesting to see. I feel like there's people mm-hmm. are dipping into a lot of different flavors right now.
Yeah, they're pulling old VHS or mini DV cameras out of closets. And
I know. And there's a lot of like 2000s nostalgia also happening. But yeah, it's interesting.
I know.
But I like that look.
Yeah.
I'm really shaking my head that was 20 years ago, year 2000.
No, I know.
I can't believe we can have nostalgia for. Yeah. I still think like the 90s are like a newer decade and instead of 30 years ago.
Old news now. Yeah.
For sure. Well, did you do, and the look, did you do some kind of processing? Because it does have a filtery sort of grainy vibe.
That's... Yeah, that was a big process. Where to start with this? Well, so I guess for one, we used really heavy in-camera diffusion. Which along with the haze and the atmospheric lighting.
There's like smoke machines.
We had everything. We had the hazer on set. We had the shafts of light. I remember the day before we started shooting, I had all this whole collection of diffusion filters we'd rented. And I was going through a test with my AC and we would put every level of filter in just so we could, look at the dailies and settle on, okay, this is exactly the level of diffusion we want. And I remember at the end of the test, we had a couple extra minutes and I just told my AC, just for the hell of it, let's put everything we have in there. We'll put like the classic soft 2 and the whatever, like three different
all
filters
the,
in there.
All the diffusion.
And it's going to be crazy, but we might as well just do it. And then, Natalie and I looked at the dailies, from the test and that last clip, I remember you saw it and I was like, she was like, that's the one, that's the look. And I'm like, are you sure? Like, that's a lot of diffusion.
It's and like, sure enough, barely see it.
That's the look we ended up going with, was the, I think, two filters at like the heaviest density we had.
Extreme.
So anyway, that was part of the look. And then the film grain, that was something I had been working on for a while. So one thing I used to focus on a lot was working on methods to accurately represent, to accurately do film print emulations when you're shooting digitally. That was a big thing that kind of got into, 5 or 6 years ago. But that was something I had done a lot of research on in terms of like writing my own algorithms to simulate film grain and developing sort of my own profiling systems for actually matching like existing film stocks, from the 60s or 80s or 90s. But we knew we wanted this sort of grainy kind of home movie, somewhere between like 8mm and 16mm look to it. We shot digitally, but we ended up using an early version of my grain algorithm, to simulate film grain.
Yeah. Ted, if it's not clear, has like a very technical background. So he like studied science in college. So he comes at things sometimes from like a very,
I've been getting less technical about things in the last couple of years, but, coming from that background, that was sort of a natural approach for me, was to work out these technical solutions myself.
If you want it to look like film, it's going to look exactly like.
And also at that time, film plugins weren't really a common thing yet either. There were like one or two like really professional companies who, if you're doing a studio feature film, you pay them a ton of money and you can use their really good algorithm. But in terms of stuff that was accessible to independent films, there really weren't a lot of options at the time. And the ones that did exist weren't really that realistic looking. So that's part of why I kind of went with the roll your own, and kind of developed my own algorithm for it. Nowadays it's less of an issue. There's a lot of really good sort of plugins and stuff out there, but at the time it was kind of unique, in terms of how it would do it realistically.
For sure. Yeah. And, boy, that was almost, you almost could have had a big business there. selling your algorithm.
A lot of my DP friends talked to me about that and they were like, you really should just like write this into software. And I looked at it, but I just didn't have the time to, there's a big time difference between, writing software that you can use yourself and, polishing it enough to actually be something that you can give to other people.
For sure.
Well,
yet another cool, that's a great cool luxury. And when Natalie said, if I can't tell Ted is pretty scientific. I'm like, well, as soon as he, obviously, I mean, cinematography is a science, right? I mean, you are, you don't sound like the kind of cinematographer who isn't set doing all the settings manually anyway. Yeah. I mean, there's no autofocus here, but as soon as you mentioned writing your own algorithm, I thought, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I really like about it. I think that's part of why I fell into, I mean, in addition to just the personal connection to loving making images, I think that's part of why I fell into it, was it was a very natural fit, where it's a discipline that's right at the intersection of science and technology and art. And I think, yeah, I think it's important to me. I've always found it to be important and helpful to me as a DP to have a really thorough understanding of how your image is being made. Just because I think it enables a lot of things creatively that aren't otherwise possible.
And I love that you're experimental, both of you, and that, for example, in those test shots, you went ahead and threw everything on at once and then you showed your director, and your director is like, there it is, because it, I'm sure I'm happy. I'm so glad that you made that choice, because it does look so different. I mean, we have over, I think in four seasons of the Discovery New Film TV series, we have like 86, 87 films. Nothing looks like Beast. nothing has that visual. And there's some really cool visual films, but they don't have that look. So I'm so glad that you threw something random together at the last
second. I think that's one thing that is I really like about working together. I think you tend to push me a little farther than I would maybe normally go on my own, which is great. Because I remember like watching the test, and I was looking at all the clips, and I was like, none of these really feel right. But I couldn't figure out why. And it was because I was just getting stuck in this valley of doing a little bit, but not going far enough. And it ended was kind of feeling like sort of non-committal in the look. And then,
I think we shot for 2 days, and after the first day, we came home the next day, and you showed me just, I think, some stills, and you were like, "Oh my God, did I ruin it?" Like, it's so.
I know.
Like,
as soon as I looked at the dailies from the first day, I freaked out. I was
so stressed out because
I way overdid this.
But I was like, no, that's perfect. It's perfect.
And then you looked and you know, reassured me. And I was like, no, you're right.
Like,
we really had to, in order for this look to work, you have to go all the way with it. And
Absolutely. Funny. This is hilarious to me, because I went to a Q&A ages ago with Soderbergh. I think it was after Traffic. And everything you're saying sounds like a cinematographer, and everything Natalie's saying sounds like a director. And Steven Soderbergh said to this crowd at the Egyptian, someone said, like, why did you shoot it yourself this time? Why did you? And he said, I can't, because there's a lot of fucked up shit cinematography wise, and like just blasting windows open and having the aperture way too wide. He's like, a professional cinematographer isn't allowed to break the rules this hard.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if I tried to force one to do it, he'd look at me and go, yeah, but if your film bombs, then I don't work again, because people blame me for doing exactly what you asked for. And that's actually why he operated himself in style. The cinematographer, like, you're not supposed to go so far that it looks like nothing anyone's ever seen before.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. That's
fascinating. I mean, that sounds like such a Soderbergh thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love his work so much. One of the reasons why is because I think he's one of the, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but yeah, I think that sort of freedom that he exhibits is incredible. And that's something I've been trying to get better about, it, you know, not limiting myself so much.
But
I think it's like, it's a balance.
And Natalie, those dailies you looked at and you said, no, that's perfect.
I was like, that's exactly what, and it was the same thing with adding the grain, because I was like, more. And like now I don't know if I would make the same choice with
I sometimes wonder if we overdid it.
But I think it was just a thing of like the film. I I mean, I feel like it's a mix of like a horror film and like an art film, and it's kind of like there's no dialogue and it's like strange. And so I just wanted it to feel, I wanted it to be easy for people to suspend their disbelief. And I felt like going with a look that's kind of farther out there would help do that, because it's like, okay, we're not anywhere close to reality.
100%. And I'll add that, because you push the grain, and I mean, the film takes place up in an attic, it kind of feels like a film reel that like was up in a hot attic for 75 years. And now someone's pulled it down and thrown it in a projector, and,
exactly.
And it's like an old grainy discovery.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was the feeling we wanted, because I think a lot of things in the movie were inspired by this idea, or were kind of inspired by that homemade aesthetic, and that everything's a little messy and dirty and imperfect. And I think that shows up in the production design. It shows up in the cinematography. Like, that was kind of a through line throughout everything. And that was kind of where the grain started.
Yeah.
For sure. And I mean, we're not talking about how well you got wonderful performances out of the sisters, and you wrote a really captivating story.
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say just that Arielle and Orly are the sisters, Gottesman, and they just did such a great job. And like, they were, I think, 11 and 13 at the time. Do you remember?
I think it was pretty close to that.
Yeah, but they I found them through an acting class in LA, and they just were so down to like do rehearsals, and like they love horror films, so they were like obsessive horror fans and like went to every horror film. And so it was just, I think, fun for them to like be in this kind of horror world, and they were like so into like blood makeup and like the spider and all of that, so they made it really fun to play around with.
I love that you cast it that way. I've actually had more than a handful of encounters with filmmakers who are like having trouble casting. I'm like, stop, you know, posting in backstage and go to an acting class studio and ask the teacher like, who's really good.
I literally emailed teachers and said like, oh, I'm looking for this. Do you know anyone? And someone recommended them. And they just were so like down to be in something very weird, I guess.
Yeah.
And like so comfortable with everything. And I just, I appreciated that, because I was also like not, still like getting my feet wet as a director too. So I was like, we're going to learn how to do this together. And I think they did a really great job.
For sure. And I was going to add, we're talking about all, obviously having a cinematographer with us makes us talk a little more visual. But two things I want to add is I love the animated title card. And I don't know if that's same animation as who did the stop motion, because that's drawn animation, right?
Yeah, we did that in our apartment one day.
We were trying
to figure out how to do the title.
Well, I think if I remember right, I think that actually started as a test.
Yeah.
In case you haven't picked up on it, we do a lot of testing and experimenting.
That makes testing makes things better.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so critical. But I think we were trying to figure out what to do for the title sequence, if I remember right. And you had the idea. Well, I think because of the grain and the film look, we were like, well, maybe we should have some film scratches and like kind of like an old film reel. So we knew we wanted that aspect. And then we were trying to figure out how to like make it into a title sequence. And I think you had the idea. I think what we did was we just got a bunch of like slide film, I think, just pulled it out of the canister. So it was all, you know, exposed to sunlight. And so when you develop it, it just turns black. And then we just developed 3 or 4 rolls of just black film. And just started scratching it against the table, and then I think you took a couple frames and like scratched in the title on like 4 or 5 frames, and then we just scanned it with an iPhone, I think.
Yeah, I think we just used a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just scratched.
And then we just looped like 5 frames for the text and then, you know, 10 or 20 frames for the scratches or something. And anyways, I guess the point was, I think we just did it in like a day because we wanted to see how it would look and like if this was the right direction to go for the title. And then as soon as we composited it together, we were like, this is perfect. We don't need to change it.
Yeah.
You made the title card for this film its own little art project.
Yeah. Basically.
Which is super cool. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, since we're talking about the visuals so much, is the sound design.
Hmm.
I think the sound design for the film is superb.
Thank you.
Is that a toughie?
No, I just... The sound was tough. This is like, I think... I mean, the thing is that people have complimented the sound design, and I think maybe it's just that thing of, like, if I weren't the person who made it, maybe I would be able to watch it with, like, and see it differently. I think because it had no dialogue, we ended up... I mean, because it had no dialogue, I think we ended up... I don't know. I think this is one of those things where, like, I didn't, again, totally know what I was doing, but... Someone said, like, oh, you should just, you know, you don't have to record sound because you can just, like, Foley it in after and it'll be...
I think it started as a cost thing.
As a way to save money of just, like, not having to have a sound person on set. And then it also, I mean, it was a helpful choice with working with the girls because that way I could be talking to them through takes. And I think it did probably help get better performances, but so we Foley'd all of the sound in, and I just feel like it went a little too, it's like there's some places where I'm like, it's a little too much, like it feels like it's a little distracting, but again, like, I don't know, I shouldn't be critiquing.
You are allowed to critique your own work. It's okay. totally fair.
I would probably pull it back a little bit if I were to do it again.
But you know what's really interesting is you essentially made a silent film.
Yeah.
The whole film was MOS.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you went back and maybe you just needed more testing to be happy with what.
Yeah, well,
with
also
the sound.
Had never done that. Had never worked with a sound mixer in that way or added any sounds to something. So I think that was like definitely learned a lot doing that. And I think there are places where it works well. Like I think the opening, it has this sort of like lush feeling to it and it pulls you in. And then there's places where like, I don't know, it sounds like a little alien-y. I don't know.
I mean, that's what... being in the camp of liking your sound, I just think it's very just the same way that your stop motion spider sets it apart and makes it different. All these elements we're talking about are how the creative choices are so original. And the sound, I think the sound complements all that.
That's true. And it also, I will say, it is different when I listen to it on my computer than like when I saw it in a screening, because I think that it made a little more sense, like when the image is big and it felt like it fit a little bit more. So there's that. I mean, sound is difficult. I think it's something I am still figuring out.
We can get further into it. Hey.
Yeah.
I will always remember a friend's film, and this is like 30 years ago, but I came in and he to the sound mixers actually, and they were going through this scene, and it was like a guy walking around an attic of all things. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize they'd removed tons of tracks and they were just focusing on like 4, and I thought this is artistic genius, the way the feet are scraping and you focus on all of it. And then I went to his screening and like there was all this ambient noise and voices and this and that. I'm like, oh, wasn't artistic at all. It's just like if you yank out 2/3 of the sound, all of a sudden.
I know.
It's and better.
It's also one of those things where it's like there's maybe like the way that it's done, and then there's like the creative choices that I would make, and I think I was still just like learning how it's done, and so it was a learning experience on the sound. But
fair enough. And then you locked it and took it out on the festival circuit.
Yeah, it was also my first time doing that, and I think it sort of like we got into a few nice like smaller festivals where we got to go and like meet people, like the Sherman Oaks Festival, and it was just fun like to finally see something I had made. I had never seen something I made like projected big cool. like that, and it was just a lot of fun.
For sure. And so what have you been doing the last year and a half, 2 years? I know I have a feeling like the last year and a half, but I think it, you know, you had a little stretch there. Have you kept writing? Have you made shot anymore?
Yeah, we sometimes.
Oh, well, obviously you applied to MFA.
Yeah. So yeah, we ended up shooting another short film called Smile, and that also it's a mix of stop motion and live action. It takes place in a dentist's office, and it's like a patient ends up spitting up a slug, and the slug is animated. And yeah, I guess it's actually similar. And that was the first thing we did after Beast, and that's on the website No Budge. Have you heard of that? It's like an indie film website. They have a lot of short films, and
I think they just started a streaming app.
Right? Yeah, they have an app. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was one of my favorite projects.
Yeah, it was another like fun project, and then I started a film program, so I made a couple of shorts through the program, and the most recent one is called Flight, right? And Ted also shot that. And that is the last thing we made before like COVID shutdowns.
That was just about to start doing festivals and stuff.
Yeah. And so we were starting to submit to festivals when COVID happened. So that's been kind of a bummer. Everything kind of like has either been delayed or gone online, but that's okay. Do you have any
other
updates? I guess like all of our, the projects we've done together. Yeah. So I feel like I
feel like we've grown a lot as artists since Beast, especially with those projects. I know I've grown a lot as a DP since then. It feels like, when did we make Beast? Was it 2017? I know it was released in...
Yeah, it hit the festivals in 2019.
2019, so we must have made it in 2018. It feels like ages ago.
I know. So, I mean,
it feels like way longer than that to me, but... I've obviously been doing our projects, a couple commercials and stuff on the side. I started moving away from commercials a little bit to focus on narrative. That's what I enjoy that a lot more.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got the MFA gets to start up again now. Do you get to go back to school now that it's fall?
Going back in September, I think, if everything goes according to plan, which
I know, I keep lately seeing headlines like Delta, it's as bad as it's ever been, but we're just going to pretend it's not. Now we're all on board with denial.
Yep. That's stressing me out. But yeah, I guess that's the plan right now, and I'm going to keep making shorts. I have a feature that I'm writing that hopefully will be in the future, and everything's looking good.
Yeah. All right, very cool. And before I will wrap it up, and then we'll record another podcast, which will be Natalie and Ted answering the fun four questions that we do here. But before we wrap up, is there a website you want to give out?
Yeah. So mine is my name, natalieprocchio.com. And that's like, I have my portfolio on there. And then Ted.
Yeah. I mean, I've got my portfolio on my website, which is tedvb.com. I got my portfolio there and some still photos and stuff. And trying to get good. Better. But.
And if you remind me, we can put those in on the Discover Indie Film website, like with links if you want.
Oh, sure. But, cool.
All right, cool. Well, I will wrap it up with all the websites for people to check out and stuff. Again, if you want to see Beast, you should watch it before listening to this. But by now, you really got to want to see it right after hearing all that went into it. So you can see that on Amazon Prime Video as part of the Discover Indie Film TV series. Just go to season 3, episode 7. And it's like an art film episode. Because it comes right before it plays with The Man in Mel, which is a very cool sci-fi. So we kind of have something a little horror and something a little sci-fi there. And I had mentioned, if you want to learn about the Discover Indie Film TV series or the podcast, go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's @DIFWINS. And if I didn't say it, yeah, just go to Prime Video anywhere you can and type in Discover Indie Film and then season 3, episode 7. There's 4 seasons at this point. And we mentioned that Beast was at Filmvasion Los Angeles back in 2019. That festival is every June, and you can learn about it if you go to filminvasionla.com, and it's @FilmInvasionLA on social media. And it does have a sister festival, the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and that is shermanoaksff.com. We screen every November, this is August 2021, so I'm crossing my fingers that 3 months from now, theaters are still open, because we've booked that sucker for a full week. We've got so much backlog. And you can learn about that at ShermanOaksFF.com, and on social media, it's @ShermanOaksFF. And I'm going to say your last name correctly for the first time, Natalie. Natalie Paracchio.
Yep.
I would always do ch. But I happen to know that the two C's, I grew up with a friend who is Italian with the two C's, and I know it was Ciccone.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. I should have said Paracchio. I should have gotten that.
My bad. I'll take both. Yeah. Thank you.
And Ted Von Bevern, the cinematographer. And anyone wants to send him pages of a script they're working on, he's got a good eye. Probably not. Take that back. And I'll thank everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.